He paused, then said softly, "You taught that man and his sons to leave us be. If you had allowed your eagle to teach them, the rest of the Salsenti in that group would have taken the story to his village, and they all would have trembled in fear."
"Maybe someone did," said Seraph coolly. "Maybe that's why, instead of welcoming us and looking to us to help them when my brother took us into the village years ago, the villagers feared us so much that they burned my brother."
"The Salsenti already fear us. That is the problem," said Hanea. "Fear leads to violence. The villagers who killed Seraph's brother were very afraid and too ignorant to know that they had nothing to fear from a traveler. Perhaps because in the last few generations we have taught them that they should fear us."
"Rot," said Benron curtly before turning his attention back to Seraph.
"You have lived among them for what?"
He glanced at Jess and Lair and came up with an accurate guess.
20 years or more? You are beginning to sound like one of them. Or worse, one of the old ones who sit around the fire and say, we are supposed to protect them.
The anger in his voice was honest now.
Let them protect themselves. They have wizards.
Who are helpless against the evil we fight, said Seraph. Ben Rolne's lip curled.
When Salsenti soldiers caught my father and our hunter and Raven out alone, there was nothing we could do but bury them. Had my father not believed the old folk tales, he could have taught that village what harming a traveler might mean. When those villagers killed your brother, you could have saved him, could have made them so afraid that the thought of harming one of us would never occur to them again. How many of us died because you didn't teach them what you taught that man today? How many more will die because you didn't loose the talons of your eagle upon them instead of tricking them into thinking you'd set a spell on them?
Part of Seraph agreed. Part of her had wanted to burn the village to the ground. She had spent most of that first night at Tyr's side, wondering how long it would take her to get back to the village and avenge her brother. She could have killed them all.
Your father was killed?
Said Hanea softly, taking Ben Rolne's arm in sympathy and distracting him from Seraph. He nodded, his anger dissipating under Hanea's attention.
Our clan guide took us to the Sept of Arvel's Keep. My father said that they'd never admit a whole clan, so he, who was Raven, took our other Raven, my cousin Kyries, who was only 15, and our hunter to see what was amiss. They didn't even make it to the gate of the keep before they were shot from ambush.
Terrible, agreed Seraph. When I think about that village where my brother was killed, I think of how helpless they would have been against my power. I think of the children who lived there, and the mothers and fathers. More death never solves a crime, no matter how regrettable. She tried to keep her tones conciliatory, but she could not agree with him. Benron met her gaze for a moment, then dropped his head in the respectful bow of a vanquished opponent.
And so I learn from your wisdom.
Lair, who'd come upon them as Seraph had been giving her last speech, snorted and then grinned at Benron.
She knows better than that. That's what she always said to Papa when she didn't want to agree with him, but he was winning the argument.
Seraph smiled gently. We can agree to disagree. The travelers were a highly organized people, just like a well-trained army, and for the same reasons. Every person had an assigned role. Seraph hadn't realized, not really, how independent the life that they'd led in Redurn had been. As long as the Sept's tithes made it to him, they were left largely alone to do as they wanted. If she'd been married to another Redurny man, that might have meant that she would have been at his mercy. But Tyr was Tyr. He'd sought her advice, and she'd worked shoulder to shoulder with him both in the fields and in the kitchen. She'd grown used to the freedom of making her own decisions. When Isfain had pointed to a place and told her to make camp there, she'd nearly told him where to take his orders.
If she hadn't caught Lair watching her expectantly, Seraph would have done just that. Instead, she'd just nodded and gotten to work. At least they accorded Seraph some leeway for being Raven and clan leader, if only just of her family plus Hanea. Lair they treated like a green boy. Tyr had never treated him so. She just hoped he was enough his father's son to hold his peace until she'd had time to learn more about this clan. They might be a great help in retrieving Tyr. Seraph pitched in to help prepare the evening meal. Some of the men tended horses and goats, some set out to fish, and a smaller group set out into the forest to see what game they could find. Jess and Lair joined the latter group. She'd had time to talk with Lair, and Seraph knew he wouldn't give himself away. He didn't care for Ben Roln much, either.
"My cause told me that you married a Solcenti," said the woman on Seraph's left, while her clever fingers and sharp knife were making short work of deboning one of the rabbit carcasses that were the basis for tonight's meal. There was such studied neutrality in the words that Seraph didn't reply, pretending that skinning her own rabbit took up all of her attention.
"What was it like?" said the woman on the other side of her with hushed interest. "I've heard that Solcenti men..."
She was quickly hushed by several of the other women who were giggling as they chided her.
"Would you look at this?"
exclaimed a woman in gravelly tones. Seraph turned and saw a tiny, ancient crone approaching the table set up to prepare food. Her hair was pale yellow and thin. It hung in a braid from the crown of her head to her hips. Her shoulders were stooped and bent, and her hand as knobby as the staff she balanced herself with.
"You'd think you'd never had a man before the way you act here. She is a guest. Ah, you embarrass the clan."
"Druid," said the woman who had begun the conversation, "what brings you here?"
"Druid," said Seraph, setting down the naked rabbit carcass and wiping her hands on the apron someone had given her.
"Are you the healer?"
Even 20 years ago, Bruid the healer had been ancient. The old woman nodded.
"That I be," she said. "I know you, child. Isolde's raven, the one who survived."
The woman on Seraph's right put aside the food she was working with and hurried over to tuck her hand under Bruid's arm and lend support.
"Come, grandmother, you need to get off your feet."
Scolding gently and prodding, the woman took Bruid away toward a wagon built up on all four sides and roofed like a small house on wheels. A carris, it was called, for the carry, the elders who were the only travelers who rode in them.
"Raven,"
said the old woman, stopping for a moment to turn back and look at Seraph.
"Not all shadows come from the evil one."
"People can be evil all on their own," agreed Seraph. Satisfied with Seraph's reply, the old woman tottered back to her carriss.
"She can still heal," said the woman on Seraph's left. "But she's a little touched. It's the years, you know. She won't tell anyone how old she is, but my cause is her great-grandson."
3 days of travel with Rongier's clan taught Seraph a lot about them. Benron and the old healer were the only ordered among them, though they had a few who could work magic in the Solcenti fashion, with words and spellcasting that hoped to gather enough stray magic to accomplish their task. It was most remarkable, she thought, watching as a young man named Rilkin used a spell to light a damp log, that they got any results at all. Her father had been gifted that way, and they'd spent many a traveling day exploring the differences between her magic and his. A Solcenti spell cast out a blind net into the sea to haul in whatever stray magic might attach itself to the net. Ordered magic was more like putting a pail in a well. She turned back to grooming Skew and to her current worries. Tyr she could do nothing about until they reached Taela, so she tucked her fear for him away until it might be useful.
Lair and Jess were more immediate concerns. They were growing more and more unhappy with the continued association with the traveling clan. Skew stretched his neck out appreciatively when her brush rubbed a particularly good spot. Skew, at least, was having the time of his life with all the attention he was getting. Lair, however, chafed under the commands that all of the men and most of the women of the clan felt free to throw at him. Without hinting at what he was, he couldn't win their respect by his hunting skills, so they treated him as they treated all the other young men. No one gave Jess orders. They all knew what he was. Her daylight Jess was bewildered by the way they lowered their eyes around him and avoided him. Seraph didn't remember her clan treating her brother, the Guardian, that way. The Librarian's clan hurt Jess's feelings by their rejection, and that made the Guardian restless. Jess was one of the people he protected. Hanea helped. She knitted in the evenings and found things that required Jess's aid. He was calmer around her, too. Perhaps it was the discipline of being Raven that made Hanea easier for Jess to bear. Some people, like Alanath, were hard for him to be in the same room with. Mother, it was Lair. Have you seen Jess? He was with me at dinner, but someone decided they needed a dray mule, and I was the nearest they could find. When I went back to the dining tables, Jess wasn't there. I checked the horses, and he wasn't there either. Hanea was looking for him, too. He's not in the camp, Mother. I told Hanea I would check with you. To see if she wanted him to search, even though someone might notice what he was doing. I don't... Seraph stopped speaking abruptly. Over Lair's shoulder, Seraph saw Benron, Kors, and Kalahar approach with intent. Isfain, the fourth man, was nowhere to be seen. The air of grim triumph Benron wore was as damning as the guilt on Kor's face. She stepped around Lair so she stood between him and the leadership of the clan of Rongir.
"Is something wrong?"
asked Benron. "I don't know," Seraph replied softly. "I think that's something you can tell me." "Where is Jess, Benron?" Benron held his arms out open palm to show her he meant no harm.
"He is safe, Seraph. I won't harm him unless there is no other way to save my clan."
Seraph waited.
"Jess is in one of the tents with Isfain at watch."
"What do you want?" she asked. Benron smiled as if to say, "See, I knew you'd do it my way." 3 days had obviously not taught him much about her. She hoped that her other secrets were as well hidden.
"My uncle has been scouting for work for us, and he found some not 5 miles down the road."
"What kind of work?" asked Seraph.
"There is a merchant who buys grain and hauls it to Corhaden to sell. Last year, one of the farmers with whom he had a contract delivered his grain himself and cost our merchant money and reputation when he wasn't able to deliver the grain he had promised his buyers. He went to the courts for redress, but they were unable to help him."
"I see," said Seraph neutrally.
"I want you to curse this farmer's fields."
"To teach him a lesson," she said.
"Right," he smiled engagingly. "Just like that man who assaulted Hanea."
"But this merchant will pay you money."
"Yes."
He didn't even have the grace to look uncomfortable. "And what will I get out of it?"
"Your family will have a home at last, a place where they will fit in and no one taunts them for their traveler blood. We will share with you all that is ours," said Kalahar, as if he were offering her a gift instead of blackmailing her.
Benron was smarter than that.
"Safety," he said. "For you and your family."
Seraph stared at them for a minute.
"You can't hold Jess for long," said Lair confidently. "He doesn't like strangers much. He'll know that there is something wrong."
He was right, or should have been. Seraph watched, but Benron's confidence didn't falter. "You have a foundrail," she said, suddenly certain it was true. There weren't many of them, but then there weren't many clans left either. They weren't such fools as to try to keep a guardian prisoner without something to keep him under control.
What is that?
Asked Lair. Guardians can be difficult to control, she explained without looking away from Ben Roland's face. They are driven to protect their own at the expense of everything else. Sometimes their imperatives are inconvenient. Guardians don't follow orders well at all. She wasn't going to tell them how common it was for an eagle to lose his daytime persona and become completely violent, even toward the people he had previously protected. A raven a long time ago came up with a solution. She created 10 foundrails, collars that keep the guardian from emerging, before she realized what the end effect of repressing a guardian is.
What's wrong with it? Asked Lair. Is Jess in danger?
Seraph fingered the knife at her hip. Let's just say that if they thought they had problems with their guardians when they decided to use the foundrail, they had real problems the first time they decided to take it off. The use of foundrails is forbidden except under the most dire conditions.
My father will keep him calm. Your guardian will experience no difficulties unless you give him reason to think that there is danger, said Kalahar, stung by the contempt in her voice. Seraph, I've looked all over.
Hanea's voice died out as she recognized the confrontation. These men have taken Jess, Seraph told Hanea, so that I will aid them in cursing a man's field. They will receive gold for their efforts. She saw Hanea's face as worry faded, leaving behind a facade as cold as ice. Just such a face had Hanea worn as she knelt beside the dead priest in Redurn.
They take gold to curse people?
Seraph spat on the ground in front of Benron. They have chosen to forget who we are, but they have me at a disadvantage. She shook her head in disgust and then looked at Lair. She needed someone to tend Jess, someone he trusted who would sit by him calmly until she could get Benron to take the foundrail off. The collars could only be taken off by the person who put them on. But Lair was too angry, she thought in near despair. Jess would know that there was something wrong.
Where's Jess? Asked Hanea.
Seraph looked at the other woman's expressionless face thoughtfully.
Kors, she said abruptly. We'll take you to Jess. He's being held with the foundrail. Isfain is supposed to be keeping him calm. I would appreciate it if you would do your best to see that Jess is not discomforted while I go with Benron.
A foundrail?
If anything, Hanea's voice was colder than before. A blush rose on Kor's cheeks. Hanea's mouth was tight with anger, but she nodded her head at Seraph.
I'll take care of him. He's been helping me knit in the evenings since we met up with this clan. Sometimes simple tasks help.
Thank you, Hanea, said Seraph, feeling vast relief at Hanea's confidence. She pointed to the tent entrance.
Gora, stay. Guard.
The last thing she wanted was for one of these fools to get their hands on the ordered stones. Once the dog was sitting where she'd asked him to, she said, Lair, my dear, it looks like you might miss the hunt today. You will come with me. I have no desire to lose anything more than I can help on this fool's errand. Chapter 12 Hanea stalked behind Kors, the canvas bag that held her needles and woolen thread clutched tightly in one hand. Her anger was partly self-disgust. She knew better than to get involved. That always brought unnecessary pain. Poor Moselm. He'd been such a kind man, uncomplicated. They'd been lovers before they'd been taken, but it had been little more than a convenience to both. Moselm's wife had died several years before of one of the mysterious ailments that plagued the traveling clans. They had come together for comfort. But it was the traveler's lot in life to confront things that no one else would face.
If Mozelm's death brought the light of destruction to the path, he would have counted his life well spent. But Jess... There was no peace in dying among kinsfolk, and Hanea, like Seraph, knew that every minute that Jess spent collared by the Foundrail brought him that much nearer to madness and a merciful death at the hands of those who loved him. She didn't want to do that ever again. That travelers would come to this. Travelers sworn and taught to aid the Salcenti. For gold and hatred they betrayed their oaths and put a good man at risk. Perhaps they all deserved the fate that the Salcenti intended to mete out. Kors, subdued and somber with doubt, led Hanea toward one of the more distant campsites. The clansfolk they encountered on the way bowed their heads and refused to look her in the eye. They knew, she saw, and they were ashamed, but angry at the guilt they felt. Before long, she thought, they'd turn that guilt into righteous indignation. "See what the Salcenti have turned us into," they would say to one another, so lacking in pride that they could not even accept the responsibility for their own downfall. Kors stopped in front of a large tent, and they both heard Isfain's harsh voice snap out.
"Sit here and wait, boy, as I told you. Your mother has business with Benrolln, and then you may do as you wish."
Hanea's eyebrows climbed. "Supposed to be keeping him calm, is he?" she murmured to Kors, pleased when she saw that he was unhappy with what they'd just heard as well. She swept open the tent with none of the usual courtesies. Isfain was standing in front of her, and she shoved him ungently aside to see Jess perched unhappily on a tall stool in the middle of the tent. It was the only object in the tent. If Benrolln had indeed given orders to keep Jess calm, he had failed marvelously.
"Woman, watch what you do," snapped Isfain.
Evidently, he didn't care for her entrance. She ignored him.
"Hanea," Jess said in soft-spoken relief, "I need to see Mother."
One hand rubbed the leather strap he wore around his neck, turning it about as if to find a buckle or lacing that wasn't there. To Hanea's eyes, the leather was as smooth as if it had just grown around his neck.
"What are you doing here?" said Isfain. "Does Benrolln know you are here?"
She ignored him again. "It's all right, Jess," she said to the dark young man sitting restlessly on the battered old stool. "Benrolln wants to force your mother to curse some poor farmer's land for money. They're holding you with an artifact that keeps your other spirit at bay. There's nothing wrong with you. Lair went with your mother." She didn't know how much he'd understand in his current state, so she was gratified when Jess's swaying slowed down.
"They are safe," he said.
"I don't think that Benrolln will be able to do anything to Seraph that she doesn't want to happen. Lair's with her." He swallowed.
"And you are safe here."
"Yes," she agreed. "I'm safe with you. Would you help me with my knitting until your mother's business is completed?" She opened her bag and gave him a skein that she'd tangled just for this purpose. After a little hesitation, he took it from her. He stared at it for a minute, but at last his long-fingered hands began to work patiently at untangling knots. The rough wool thread had a mind of its own, and it would take a while to unravel the mess she'd made. She settled at his feet and began knitting with a ball he'd rolled for her yesterday. She leaned lightly against his leg, prepared to shift away if she made him uncomfortable. The long muscles of his thigh softened and relaxed, so she let him take a bit more of her weight. She glanced into his eyes and saw the fury trapped impotently in the net of the foundrail. She shivered and looked back at the sweater she knitted. For a while, he seemed calmer. Perhaps if the tent had not been so starkly furnished, or if that idiot Isfain had quit looking at Jess as if he expected him to explode, Jess would have been all right.
I don't like this, said Jess, abruptly throwing his yarn on the ground. I need to be somewhere.
Anaya looked up at him and saw the despair in his eyes. Enough, she thought. Wait a moment, she told him. Kors was not a problem. He knew what was right when someone shoved it in his face as much as he wished he didn't. Isfain might be more difficult. He was one of those gifted with magic, though not ordered. Hanea knew that other ravens had a tendency to look upon unordered mages as weak, but she was not so foolish. A good wizard used subtlety as well as power, and like a well-knit wool sweater, their spells could be difficult to unravel. The trick with wizards was not to give them time to do anything.
Isfain, she said simply. Hush, be still.
It wouldn't have been worth doing to a raven because they needed neither word nor movement to call magic. A wizard could call magic that way too, but it was a poor business they made of it. It would be a long time before Isfain worked his way free of her binding. What? Asked Kors incredulously, surprised at Hanea's rudeness. She put her knitting away carefully. Then she took the yarn Jess had thrown and set it in the top of her bag. Time enough later to unspell it so it could be organized more easily.
He's too far, she said.
What do you mean? Asked Kors, who still hadn't noticed that Isfain was now immobile because of her magic. He didn't know what she was.
Have you ever seen a guardian released from the Foundrail? She asked. It's not bad if they haven't been upset, but your Isfain precluded that.
Mother, said Jess sadly.
She nodded. I know. Lair will keep her from harm, but that is your job, to protect your family.
Yes,
he said. She turned to Kors. If I were you, I'd leave this tent so that you aren't the first thing he sees when he's free. She'd given him warning enough. If he didn't choose to follow, she relaxed as she heard him leave. Really, Kors wasn't a bad sort.
All right, Jess. I'm going to take this thing off.
She reached up, but he caught her hands.
Can't. Benron said only him.
Well, Hanea said. I'm not as powerful as your mother, Jess, but I have spent a long time studying. I think I know how to take the blasted thing off. I'll not lie to you, there is some danger, but not as much as leaving it on.
To me,
he said, catching her hands before she could touch the foundrail.
Not you.
Only to you, she lied, but she'd had a lot of practice lying, and it came out like the truth. He let her set her hands on the soft band around his neck. The leather was soft and new-looking, as if it had been tanned yesterday instead of centuries ago. That made it easier because she knew which one it was.
No,
he said, pulling her hands away again. It's all right, she said.
No,
Jess said again.
The guardian will kill the big man. That would be bad. He thinks that killing would be very bad for us. Killing is bad, but he would have no choice. He is very angry.
Hanea considered him. Everyone had a tendency, she thought, to ignore the daylight Jess in their fear of the guardian. Oh, Seraph loved him in either guise, but she treated him with the same indulgence and discipline that she treated their dog, and the others followed her example. Jess, thought Hanea, was more than just a disguise where the guardian resided. Impulsively, she put her hand, still clasped loosely by his, on his cheek. He closed his eyes and leaned against it, moving so the light stubble, new grown since his shaving this morning, prickled her fingers. He was just a boy, she thought, uncomfortable with the instant response his innocently sensual gesture had called from her. He might be right about killing. The Order of the Eagle came only to people who were empathic, a rare gift, and usually weak. If Jess were a strong enough empath, killing might very well be enough to damage him.
The Guardian won't calm until we take it off, Jess.
He'll just feel worse and worse, she said, though she didn't move her hand from his face. The longer we wait, the more difficult it will be. He nodded, but didn't open his eyes.
He's so angry, he said.
Dark lashes brushed her fingertips, and she shivered. He looked at her then, his eyes dark and hungry.
You could make him not angry, said Jess. He likes you, too. Kiss me.
His suggestion startled her. She'd never heard of anyone trying something like this, likely because only an idiot would think of kissing an angry guardian. Her lips were still canted in a smile when they touched his. It was an innocent kiss at first, because he called that from her, though not without arousal. His lips were a little chafed, and the rough surface scraped hers in butterfly wing caresses. She could feel him tense when her hands touched his neck again, so she opened her mouth to nip lightly at his lips, distracting him from what she did. It distracted her, too, but not so much that she fumbled the unlocking. As soon as she finished, fear washed through the tent like a flash flood, taking her breath with its strength. She dug her fingers into Jess's shoulders, which had turned to iron. But he didn't fight her as she held him to her and touched his lips with her tongue. Fear had driven away the embarrassment she felt at seducing him, but it hadn't erased the desire he called from her. When he took charge of the kiss, she softened for him and allowed him to vent his fury into passion. It was the guardian who gentled the kiss again and shifted his weight away from her. He rubbed his face against hers, like a cat marking his territory, and then pulled away despite the tension that shook his body.
Benrolln has mother and lair?
He asked hoarsely. She had to clear her throat before she could say anything.
Yes, she said.
She averted her face, knowing her cheeks were red, so she didn't have a chance to move away before he touched her again. He pulled her against him and set his chin on top of her head.
We'll go find them, he said.
Then he must have noticed Isfain, because he stiffened.
What have you done to that one?
He growled. She used the excuse of looking at Isfain to step out of Jess's arms. Not as much as I'd have liked to, she said. Benrolln was young when he stepped up to the leadership, if I understand the history that led to this stupidity. But you, she tapped Isfain's nose reprovingly, you knew better. He was your sister's son, and you taught him poorly.
Release him, said the guardian.
She cocked her head at him warily.
Why?
When he growled at her, she found herself smiling despite the way the skin on her back flinched.
I think we'd better just leave him as he is until we find Lair and your mother, don't you?
Soft-hearted, he said.
Better than soft-headed, she replied. Should we go after Lair and Seraph?
He stepped around her and held open the tent flap.
I'd rather eat someone, he said.
She thought it was for Isfain's benefit, but she wasn't quite sure.
But we'll head out looking for Mother first. Is Gura here?
Seraph told him to guard the tent, she said.
As she ducked through the flap, he put his lips near her ear and said,
Don't feel guilty.
She stopped so abruptly that the top of her head collided with his jaw hard enough that she heard his teeth click.
Why should I feel guilty for kissing a handsome young boy? She said sarcastically without lowering her tone at all.
To her amazement, he grinned at her. Guardians didn't grin. They smiled with pleasure while they choked the life out of some poor fool who crossed them. They bared their teeth. They didn't grin.
I don't know. We both enjoyed it very much, Jess and I.
His grin widened.
And we'd like to do it again as soon as possible.
Here you are,
said a young man in rich clothing who awaited them in a small clearing set in the side of a hill and overlooking a 20-acre field with a tidy cottage at the far end.
I thought you might not make it.
Benron smiled congenially.
I don't break contracts, sir. And besides, said the young man, you knew there was more gold where you got the first, eh?
He looked too young to have been a merchant for long, thought Seraph. Then she reconsidered. There was a softness in his face that made him look exceedingly young, but his eyes were sharp and old. I'll bet that he uses that young face of his, Seraph thought as she revised her estimate of his age upward by 10 years.
Of course, sir, said
Benron after he laughed politely at the merchant's comment.
This is the woman who will set the spell. And this is the farm right here, replied
the merchant in a light, pleasant voice.
I want it cursed, you understand. Paid good money for a mage to curse it last year, but Asherstall still got a harvest out. I told that sorcerer I wanted nothing to grow on these fields, not even a weed. I want the other farmers to avoid Asherstall for fear whatever befell him will happen to them. I want him shamed. You'd better do the job, or maybe some ill might befall you, eh? Like happened to that mage I hired last year.
Benron looked taken aback, and Seraph wondered if he'd believed that sweet, innocent air the merchant exuded. Your mage's curse is still here, she murmured. Perhaps you had him killed too soon. I'll have to take it off before I can work.
I don't tell a tanner how to do his job, said the merchant. I just pay him for good work.
He made an odd motion with his hand that might have been accidental, but Tyr had taught the boys the sign soldiers used. It had the look of one of those. Lair had caught it too, she thought. He faded back silently into the night. Neither the merchant nor Benron seemed to notice. She doubted the merchant had ever seen him to begin with.
I'll have to go down to the edge of the field, Seraph said.
Fine, fine, he agreed. It's dark enough that they won't see you. We can wait in the trees that border the field.
He led the way down. If Benron was worried by anything, Seraph couldn't tell, but she thought not. If he'd been properly worried about the merchant, he wouldn't have left Isfain and Kors to tend Jess and Hanea. More fool he to trust a man who'd curse another man's living. She suspected that the hidden men were to come out when she finished to make certain neither Benron nor she told anyone that he'd paid to have this poor farmer's fields cursed. Lair wondered if his mother had caught the signal the merchant had sent. There were men out here somewhere, men waiting to kill Benron and his mother when the merchant decided he was finished with them. Personally, Lair wasn't worried about Benron one way or the other, but his mother was another matter entirely. Lair backtracked the merchant until he found a place where the man had waited with 4 others. Enough men to account for a couple of travelers as long as they took them by surprise. Each had taken a different path. They left no tracks that he could see because the forest was inky dark. Not even the starlight illuminated the ground under the trees. But he knew they had been there because he could smell them. He shuddered. What was he that he could scent a man like a dog? He drew his knife and picked a trail to follow. When they came to the edge of the woods, the merchant motioned Seraph on. He and Benron settled in to wait under the cover of the trees while she worked her magic. She sat down on the ground at the edge of the field, just outside of the area of planting. She could see the weaving of magic through the soil. The mage this merchant had hired had done well. It was going to take her a long time to clean the field. Time for Lair to find the merchant's men. Time for Jess to be lost to the effects of the foundrail. She began plucking the threads of the dead mage's spell without further ado. As she did so, the familiarity of what she was doing settled around her with a feeling of rightness. This is what she had been born to do. After a while, the merchant became impatient.
I don't see anything. I don't pay good money for nothing, and I don't put up with people who try to steal from me.
Tell him I can't work unless he's quiet, said Seraph serenely, knowing that the calmer she was, the worse the merchant would take it. His sort always liked to see people cringe in fear of him. She could have given him a light show, but the people her magic told her were sleeping in the cottage might be awakened. She didn't want them coming out to investigate with the merchant's armsmen lurking about. The wrong people might be killed.
Come away,
Ben Roln said to the merchant with an air of determinedly cheerful diplomacy.
This will take a while. I brought a pair of dice with me. We can pass the time while Seraph works.
Just as well he'd intervened before she'd pushed the merchant too far, she thought, and turned her attention back to the field. Lair needed all the time she could buy him.
Now, why didn't you work? She asked as she pulled the cursing magic away from stalks of wheat, only half the size they should be this time of year. Nonetheless, with the strength of the spell she was unraveling, this field shouldn't have grown anything more than a sprig of cheatgrass. Night fell, but she didn't pay any attention. What she was looking at didn't require light for her to see. Finally, she detached the last of the spelling, and, unanchored, the weave fell apart and lost its form. The magic the wizard had imbued in his casting drifted off when the spell lost its power. It didn't go far before it was caught firmly and pulled back into the earth to enrich the soil. That was when Seraph realized how it was that the farmer had managed to grow wheat in this field. There were other creatures that used magic besides the shadow beasts who lived in the Ragged Mountains. Most of them had died fighting at Shadow's Fall, but some of them escaped. This one hadn't been strong enough to remove the spell, but it had done a great deal to mitigate the effects. Likely whatever it was, it had felt her meddling and was watching from nearby. She murmured, smiling in pleasure as she leaned forward and pressed her hands onto the field, sinking her hands into the soft ground where the magic held in the grains of dirt made her fingers tingle. Seraph sent out a drift of seeking magic again, this time looking for a creature not human. She found something almost immediately, but it was different than she expected. Darkness, but not shadow. Somehow more natural, more elemental than the woods around her. Something frightening. It could only be Jess. The time had come, whether Lair was finished or not. She set the mystery of the farm's protector aside and began her show. She stood up and held both arms out theatrically, calling out in the old tongue. They weren't words of power. She didn't need them for this. She didn't know many words of the old tongue, but she was willing to bet that Ben Roln knew even less. Theatrics, her father would have scolded her, but her grandfather would have understood. Some people wouldn't believe in magic until it came with light and sounds. The merchant himself had given her the idea for this, and the magic embedded in the soil gave her the power. She called light filaments to sparkle and grow like cobwebs on the wheat, dancing from stalk to stalk until the whole field glittered in light that shifted rapidly through the shades of the rainbow in waves. It was a pretty effect, she thought, though it was merely light. But there wouldn't be a Salcenti alive who would turn their heads from the field to look behind them when Seraph's children approached. Ben Roln and the merchant stepped out of the trees, but a flicker of magic held them where they were. Now to leave the merchant in no doubt of what his gold had purchased for him. This was more difficult, and she would never have even attempted it if it hadn't been for that dark, tingling soil that ached to aid the growth of the plants rooted in it. Slowly she raised her arms together as she pushed her magic into plants. Grow, she urged them. Grow and be strong.
stalks thickened slowly and stretched up. A defter hand than hers touched them and straightened and strengthened, balancing root, stalk, and bearding head in a way that Seraph would not have, though she knew, from the rightness of the path of magic, that this was how plants ought to grow. Since her magic was not needed, she glanced toward the source of the magework and saw it, sitting near a fence post. It wasn't much bigger than a cat, a small, mossy creature with rounded, droopy ears and large eyes that gleamed with power. Its coloring matched the earth and wood so closely that she doubted that she would have seen it if the field hadn't been thrumming with its power.
"Earthkit," she said softly to herself. "This farmer must keep to the old ways."
"When he had naught but old bread and milk for his own children, he didn't forget me,"
agreed a voice she felt as much as heard.
"Such acts are to be rewarded."
"Indeed," agreed Seraph. Since she wasn't doing anything else, she added a crackle to the lights so that the merchant and Benron wouldn't hear her talking to the creature.
"I would not have been able to heal this so well without you."
"Nor could I break that other spelling," said the Earthkit in its rusty voice. "But I am done now."
The magic ceased abruptly, and it left in a scuttling run that her eyes could not quite follow. The wheat swayed under Seraph's lights, ready to harvest now, at least 2 months early. She lowered her arms and allowed the glitter and noise to die away slowly.
"I won't do the work of petty criminals," she said clearly.
"Raven," spat Benron. "Fine. See what happens to your children now. And as for this," he waved a hand at the field, "you may be Raven, but I am Cormorant."
Electricity began gathering in the air.
"Stupid, stupid, arrogant Raven," Seraph thought, bitterly ashamed. A storm, with the heavy wheat heads atop slender, drying stalks, would be disastrous.
If she'd just left the field alone once she'd broken the curse, the Earthkit would have seen to it that the wheat grew normally. She knew what Benron was, and being a farmer's wife, she should have remembered what disasters the weather can bring.
"Benron," she said harshly, "you are a fool. This man has assassins in the woods. Do you think they lurk there to watch the magic?"
"I don't know what you're talking about," said the merchant.
Benron stopped his casting and looked at the other man.
"Why do you think that a man like this would come here without guards?" said Seraph. "There has always been a problem doing the work of Solcenti, who are willing to hire travelers to make evil upon others of their kind."
"What do you suggest?" Benron said bitterly. "My people will starve. I tried it your way. We were driven from one place to another, sometimes by people who feared what we might do, and sometimes by people because we wouldn't do as they asked. I've had four Memori come to me. Four more clans dead and gone."
"Do not air our quarrels before Solcenti," she said sharply.
Benron glanced at the merchant and bit his lip.
"Lair took care of three of the men who were watching," said Hinea, coming out of the woods with Gura at her side. "Jess has the other one immobilized."
"So what do we do with him?"
Benron asked. Jess appeared and grabbed the merchant's hand.
"You don't want to draw that knife," Jess said quietly. "My brother's over there with one of your men's bows. No use anyone else dying tonight."
The merchant all but collapsed at Jess's touch, and Seraph's oldest son relieved him of several throwing knives.
"Asherstall," said Seraph, snapping her fingers. "The owner of this field. He has managed to survive this long. I suspect he can handle this one if we deliver him. Hinea, Jess, could you escort him there?"
She turned to Benron and said,
"I need you to call a meeting of your people tonight. I'd like to tell you some things that you need to know."
If she could persuade the entire clan to follow her to Taella, she'd have the clan's healer for her husband when she found him. She just wished she were as good at persuading people as Tyr was. Benron didn't wait for her, but stomped off, angry at her, at the merchant, and at a responsibility he didn't know how to fulfill. When Benron was gone, Jess said,
"He bears no open wounds, Mother, but Lair is hurt."
Seraph nodded.
"Take this one to the farmhouse, and don't get anyone hurt in the process, and I'll do my best for Lair."
She waited until Jess and Hanea were halfway to the cabin, but before she called out, Lair came. It was too dark to see him well, but she could smell the blood on him.
"Thank you," she said. "If you had not been here tonight, Benron and I would doubtless have been dead."
"There are three men dead instead," he said. "Jess tied the fourth one up before I got to him."
"They were men who were willing to kill for no cause but gold," said Seraph. Words were not her strength, but for Lair, she searched for the right ones. "They have doubtless killed others on the merchant's orders. Now, they will not kill anyone again."
"When I killed them," whispered Lair, coming toward her, "it was so easy. Easier than hunting deer. What am I, Mother?"
"This is what it means to be an order-bearer," she told him. "None of the orders are easy. You are hunter, and among the tasks of the hunter is the bringing of death."
She opened her arms, and when he dropped to his knees in front of her, she pulled him close. He buried his face in the crook of her neck.
"I don't like it," he said.
"Shh." She held him and rocked lightly back and forth as she had when he'd been a child.
"Shh." "Someone's waiting in front of our tent," said Jess,
just as Gura gave a happy bark and ran forward with his tail wagging.
"So,"
said Bruid from a bench someone must have carried over for her.
"You stopped Benron from his folly. That's more than I've managed to do."
Gura sat beside her and put his big black muzzle on her knee and heaved a contented sigh.
"Hardly," said Seraph. "I just pointed out that the merchant he chose to do business with was a thief and a killer, and that any other Solcenti he'd find to pay for the same sort of favor will probably be equally bad." The old woman cackled.
"I never thought of that."
"It won't stop him," said Seraph. "He's obviously done similar things before. He'll do them again."
"Most of them weren't this bad," said Bruid. "Though making certain that a village was dry a month or more in high summer, then forcing them to pay him to bring the rain is no noble deed."
"No," agreed Hanea dryly.
"Talk to him at this meeting tonight," Bruid told Seraph. "Make him understand what he does is folly."
"What good will talking do?" asked Lair. "Haven't you told him what he's been doing is wrong? Why would he listen to Mother when he won't listen to you?"
"Ha!" exclaimed Bruid. "A man would rather listen to a beautiful woman than a wrinkled old crone. You, boy," she said, pointing at Lair, "you can help an old woman to her home."
Lair took a deep breath, tightened his jaw, and nodded his head. When he took her arm, Bruid patted his biceps lightly before using him to lever herself up.
"Your mother teaches you well, boy. It is good when a youngling is kind to old women."
She winked at Seraph and continued to mutter at Lair as he led her back to her wagon.
"Right," said Seraph, hoping Bruid could do better for Lair than she'd managed. "Let's go find Benron."
"Seraph," said Hanea, "if you go and start attacking Benron for what he's done, you'll make Lair happy and we'll all go our separate ways tomorrow. Benron will still take gold from the next Solcenti who wants to pay to have his neighbor's fields destroyed, and you'll have the satisfaction of telling them what you think of them."
"You have another suggestion?" said Seraph.
The secret path is very powerful, said Hanea. They claim that they run the Empire, and that might very well be true. Having more people to call on for help could be very useful.
I've thought of that, said Seraph. But, Hanea, I am not a bard. Yelling I can do, but persuasion is another matter entirely. Would you try? She shook her head.
To Benron and his people, you are our leader. To have me speak to them would be an insult. You can do this, just remember that Benron is frustrated because there's nothing he can do to keep his people safe. Give him something to do other than rob the Salcenti of their gold. Some way to strike back, and he'll forget about the games.
Isfain was angry with Hanea, Seraph observed as she sipped her hot tea. But Hanea had told her the state she'd found Jess in, and Seraph didn't mind seeing him grit his teeth when Hanea got too close. What chance had given Hanea the knowledge of loosing the foundrail, Seraph didn't know, but she was grateful for it all the same. Hanea had certainly impressed a few people with her freeing of Jess. The whole Rongier clan, at least those present at the small gathering in front of Ben Roln's tent, were treating Hanea as if she'd grown a third head. Or maybe Hanea was just sitting too close to Jess. Jess had no intention of forgiving anyone for imprisoning him. He lurked in a wolfish form only half revealed by the flickering light of the bonfire. It might have been easier if he'd chosen to be wolf in whole, but the wolf's muzzle and eyes in an otherwise human body was particularly disturbing. Low growls told everyone that he was unhappy with them all. Seraph rather thought the shape was an illusion, but it was difficult to tell. Bruid had brought Lair with her. He looked tired, but the sickness had faded from his eyes. When the old woman griped at him and ordered him to move her camp chair 3 times before she sat in it, he actually grinned. Benron came out of his tent at last and looked around to see that everyone was there. He sat down directly opposite Seraph and nodded his head at her, so the meeting would begin with her comments. Unhappy people all, she thought, glancing around at the faces of the clan.
We could spend the night throwing accusations and debating ancient history, said Seraph. If you were not honest with what you wanted of us, well then, we were not entirely honest either. I'd like to rage at you and tell you how wrong what you've been doing is. But you already know what I think.
She took a deep breath.
So I'm going to tell you the things that we didn't tell you when you invited us to journey with you to Taella. It will take a while, and I am no bard. I ask for your patience just the same. I am Seraph, Raven of Isolde the Silent, and wife to Tiragan of Redurn. Owl in his own right, though he has not a drop of traveler blood.
By the time she brought them into the present, she was hoarse. Benron refilled her cup and urged it upon her solicitously, as if they had not just fought a battle over a farmer's field. As clan leader, it was his place to respond, so everyone sat silently while he considered her story.
This path, he said. They have been taking our people for years and stealing their orders.
Seraph nodded.
You have some of the stones? Asked Bruid.
Seraph had thought the old healer was asleep.
Yes. I'd like to see them, Bruid murmured. Bring them here when we are done, and we'll sit in the librarian's home, you and I, Hanea and Benron, and see just what evil the Salcenti have wrought.
All right, Seraph said, and then changed the subject. Tomorrow my family and I will continue on to Taella, where my husband is being kept.
You say your husband is ordered? Said Isfain. But he is a Salcenti?
That's right.
Could this secret path you told us about be the reason that the Salcenti laws have become so stringent against us? Asked Kors.
Seraph thought that they could look to themselves
and to other clans who had gone after gold rather than fighting evil, for the cause of the antipathy Salcenti had toward travelers, but she wasn't such a fool as to say so. Benron, unaware of Seraph's thoughts, nodded intently.
It could be,